seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
You're welcome along to another Golf Weekly. Our apologies. We have been remiss in our duties, I'm afraid, but we are back this week. Unavoidable, Nathan Murphy.
Just simply so busy, Joe.
Too busy, too successful for our own good.
Oh, where is that Fionn Davenport? Last I saw, he was in Washington. Mm. Last week, he seemed to be in California. The week before that, he was in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
I hate that man.
A lot of WhatsApp updates on the American coverage of golf. So it seems like he's gone to America to mostly watch golf in the middle of the American afternoon.
That is the most difficult part of watching golf in America.
Yeah.
Is that it's on in the... It just doesn't feel right. It's such a nice Sunday evening feeling in Ireland to sit down and watch the end of a PGA Tour event. Just doesn't have the same impact when it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
You feel like you should be doing something else.
Mm.
I find it's one of the main reasons I wouldn't watch much European Tour.
Do you think
often.
The European Tour, if they were to go to night golf,
could
be far more successful?
Well, it's a prime time audience, is it not?
It is. Well, maybe that's what they'll do with the Super Sixes.
Yeah.
Under floodlights.
Yeah.
Prime time.
I'd be more inclined to watch that, I think, than... You just think... I think golf moves a bit too slowly for a 3 o'clock in the afternoon to really make you feel like this is worth sticking around for. The Open being the exception. That's what I kind of find every time I'm watching. I mean, I watched Wentworth. We can talk about Wentworth, I guess. I watched some of that. So there's no Fionn here who's still on his travels. I think he's back next week. And Dave McIntyre is also very busy today. It's just been one of those busy times for all of us. So
yeah, we're quite unfortunate. This seems to be a yearly pattern now that when the golf season gets really interesting and really busy, unfortunately that's when we're really busy. But we're going to make a commitment now to the Irish Open.
Mm-hmm.
We are here. Or the Open, as we like to call it.
Yeah, the Open. We are, of course, here with thanks to our friends. The Irish Open, brought to you by Dubai Duty Free.
Or, as they might like to call it, the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open.
Yes, correct. And recent news on that, before I get to your tweets, is that Hideki Matsuyama has joined the field, which is excellent. I mean, he's somebody, if you're heading up to Port Stewart sometime around July 6th to 9th, he is worth following for a few holes.
World number four.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
Yeah. I'm curious to see just how well he strikes an iron. This is what the word is on Matsuyama. His iron play in particular is amazing. So,
and how it'll hold up around a links course.
Yeah.
It's an exciting field.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got Justin Rose and you've got a lot of the big European Tour players. But John Rahm is coming.
That's a big one.
Oh, the way John Rahm has been playing over the last few weeks. His swing, his backswing is almost Dave McIntyre's backswing.
I know.
And then somehow the ball goes further than anyone I've ever seen hit the ball before.
It's not an aesthetically pleasing swing. I don't look at his action and think, I'd love to swing the club like John Rahm.
I look at it and think, I probably do swing the club like John Rahm.
It's been interesting in that Matsuyama and John Rahm, and I guess actually it's a microcosm of golf's wider problem. You and I and other listeners to the pod, friends of the pod and golf fans heard these names and thought, oh, fantastic, John Rahm and Matsuyama, they're really good gets. You say it even to not just a casual sports fan, but a genuinely big sports fan outside in the office, the sports department. And the truth is John Rahm and Matsuyama are not quite capturing their imagination. But then very few golfers, this is the point I'm making, very few golfers could grab the casual sports fan's attention.
Is that a new phenomenon, or has it always been the way that it takes people 5-6 years seeing them contending at majors, seeing them on the Sunday of an Open Championship that suddenly they're in their mindset? Because Matsuyama's fourth in the world.
Yeah.
Rahm is in the top 10 in the world right now. If it was Phil Mickelson and Jim Furyk, if Jim Furyk announced he was playing, there'd probably be more of a buzz.
Yeah, I agree with you. Even like recently, Justin Rose was almost available to us on the show, I think. And certainly there was far more excitement amongst people, I suspect, post the Masters, just because they'd seen him and a couple of million people here in the UK, everywhere, had watched Justin Rose, and there was something to talk to him about that everybody had seen, I guess. But anyway, Matsuyama's coming, and that will be worth watching. 6th of July, it's right upon us now.
We're going to be there.
Yeah. Do we know exactly what we're doing there yet?
We're going to be doing... So we got a really nice spot just beside the Media Village and beside the Championship Village. Still trying to figure out exactly where we're going to be situated, whether people will be able to come up and say hello.
Yeah.
We'll just be wandering around, you know, doing meet and greets anyways. Lots of friends of the pod will be there. I have a bad friend of the pod story.
Oh, do you?
Well, not a bad friend of the pod story, but a friend of the pod story that I wasn't really expecting. So my grandfather passed away on Sunday.
Yeah, our condolences.
I was in the funeral home on Tuesday evening, and there were a lot of people at this funeral, and it was a steady line of shaking hands, shaking hands, shaking hands.
No.
And some guy goes, "You're the guy from the radio, aren't you?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Friend of the pod."
Oh, dear.
And I was like...
Inappropriate or lovely?
I was secretly delighted. All my cousins were around. I was like... They were like, "What's the pod?"
Oh, that's great. I was walking down Georgia Street just the other day with my other half, and we were chatting away, and there was a lad having a smoke outside a pub and a pint. It was kind of a nice sunny Saturday, and he said something to me. And I kind of kept walking, turned around, and I said, "What?" You know, a little. I was like, "What did he just say to me?" And he said, "Friend of the pod." And I went, "Oh."
You thought it was a threatening man and he was about to kill you.
Yeah.
We are going to be doing a show up there on the Friday night. We'll give you details a little bit closer.
Golf Weekly show or an Off the Ball
show?
An
Off the Ball show.
Well, who cares?
But we might push some of them to the side.
Who cares? So I'm noticing a lot more friends of the pod, actually.
It's good.
In recent months. It's a lovely thing. So tweets then before we get to the golf news. It's obviously just Nathan and I for today, unfortunately, but we'll plough on through. There's so much to talk about. It's been a really busy couple of weeks. P.O. Murphy said, "Hey lads, I'm suffering withdrawal symptoms, heading to France for holidays and could do with a pod to make the 4-hour car bearable." Well, here we are, P.O. Although I'd say he's already driven to France. His tweet was 18 hours ago.
Oh, sorry about that.
Lenny Clark, "Have you lads just thrown in the towel? What about us? We're back. We've just been busy. Dave, we expect a podcast this week. Hope so. Here we are, Dave." Pro V1 Kenobi, maybe our favourite named tweeter, was listening to Brandel Chambly some weeks ago, and he finishes this tweet with hashtag lifting the heel. "I followed a 10 with a hole-in-one today."
Oh, I'd have 17 10s just to have a hole-in-one.
Yeah. Killian Conway wonders, "Should we expect a pod this week, or at the very least, a News Talk presenter swing to analyse?"
Dave McIntyre's swing got a big reaction.
Were people sympathetic or ruthless?
No, they were ruthless.
That's the online world for you. The online world's a nasty
place. That's why I put
his
swing up and not mine.
I wouldn't. I just avoid any online comment about anything. It's a dirty, nasty place.
And it's weird how people think they're being helpful.
Yeah.
That, what Dave is looking for, and I put that up, the reason they put that up because they want our honest assessment. I was like, no, it was just a joke.
Yeah.
Go, ha ha, he's got a short little backswing. doesn't he try that? I'll tell you exactly what he's doing wrong here. That guy should give up golf. He's an embarrassment.
Oh, they destroyed him.
Yeah.
They're no friends of the pod, those lads. Danny Finnegan then. "Reckon Golf Channel were a disgrace for publishing the Tiger Woods DUI footage. That channel wouldn't even exist if it wasn't for him." We'll come on to that. Tony O'Neill just said, "Hi guys, I'm loving the podcasts, Tony." Which is nice. And Sean Smith then, "Belated listen to Brandel Chambly. I'm going to be lifting my left heel but not swaying and making the bump move." The not swaying part is so key here on the whole lifting the heel thing. What I realised watching a lot of amateurs then is that most amateurs, because we don't have the flexibility of most professional golfers these days, lift our heel anyway. We can't turn otherwise. So don't overdo it. Don't be having your heel 8 inches off the ground kind of thing. That's not what Chambly wants either.
Yeah, I'd say if you spent a few months at the range practicing lifting your left heel, if you don't do it already, it will benefit you. My two rounds of golf where I must lift my left heel were first round spent looking at my left heel instead of looking at the ball when I'm hitting it. And the other one, as you say, swaying wildly.
Yeah, no, it's far more delicate movement than we all think. And also, I just realised lately, you can't be in any way technical on a golf course. You can't be thinking about things. You've got to be disciplined enough to just say, right, I'm going out here with my crappy little swing and all I'm doing is aiming and not thinking about how I can improve my swing. It's harder said than done, clearly.
Yeah, Brandel.
Dara O'Connor, fair point. Dara O'Connor pointed out that Billy, who's Fionn's friend from Sky Sports, has moved from Sky to CBS and he was hanging out with Jim Nance and the lads.
Wow.
Billy's made it stateside.
Billy and Jim.
Yeah.
Has he produced any videos yet?
Yeah.
Oh yeah?
I haven't seen them, but Dara O'Connor sent us a screen grab of his...
Send us a link.
Of his video.
Because we did enjoy Billy and Rory.
I think on the video it was Billy the King. And it had Billy with a crown, and I guess it's a nod to the crown cameo. Yeah. But then there's an empty chair, and so it's Billy interviews golfers. Just the power of the internet.
Billy interviews Jim Nance. Yeah. We're into puke overload.
Yeah. But it just shows, I mean, to crack the States now, the internet, it went viral, done.
The European Tour did another video recently as well of it at Wentworth. Little kid, it was his ninth birthday.
Oh, yeah.
And they went around and drove the car, and they picked up Justin Rose and Henrik Stenson and Martin Keimer.
Yeah.
That was well done.
I thought it was good, but overrated by
I'm a sucker
involved.
For kids, you know, meeting their heroes.
No, it was nice. It was nice, but I mean, David Livingstone was nearly in tears on Sky Sports coverage at one stage.
I was just shocked that a 9-year-old's hero were Justin Rose, Martin Keimer, and Henrik Stenson.
I know, like the only 9-year-old. The only 9-year-old in the world. So anyway, Billy's gone to CBS, so basically he's big time now. Which is kind of extraordinary, really. And
sort
then,
of the European Tour is history, isn't it? We made this guy. He's gone.
It's such a microcosm. Owen Casey in Tokyo Airport after a great honeymoon around Japan. The wife's in duty free. I'm catching up on recent pods. # new friend of the pod, which is a whole new category.
Always welcome.
A friend of the pod, yeah. Owen Casey, you're very welcome. You're amongst friends here. This is nothing but a place for love and ego stroking is really... kind of
unless it's Dave McIntyre's swing.
Yeah, in which case, they are your tweets. We're moving on. So quite clearly the biggest story in golf in our absence over the last 2 weeks, and we will, I assure you, touch on the St. Jude Classic, which is on this week, and Harrington fearing for his career after somebody shattered his elbow and the death of Roberto Di Vincenzo, and Phil is missing the US Open. Rory won't be missing the US Open. But the biggest story, quite clearly, was Tiger Woods and the mugshot. The mugshot is now indelibly, forever implanted in all our brains. It will never be forgotten, that mugshot.
It's Hugh Grant.
The first time I saw the mugshot and the eyes, I really thought, this guy is drunk as a skunk. And I think it was widely reported that he was in lots of tabloids.
Oh, initially, the first few hours were Tiger Woods found drunk.
Yeah. DUI, I guess, suggests that. And then obviously it emerged that, TMZ were also saying that he was uncooperative and aggressive and all of this kind of stuff. And then it emerged that there was no alcohol in his breath whatsoever and that he was very cooperative. And then the video was released. I just don't understand the logic of this.
Is it not American law that if somebody, anybody, and that person can be a company, TMZ, if they request that the video is released, it has to be?
Mm. I think that is the logic, yeah. When I say I don't understand it, I just don't know if it's right. I mean, maybe it facilitates the right working order of an open democracy, but God, it's tough when you're a celebrity to have this kind of stuff thrown out there the way it was.
Even there you go, the big story. It's sort of strange knowing what we know afterwards. Like, I don't think this is actually a story. Mm. There's a sadness to it and you pity Tiger in many ways. Like, there's the story of how it developed and how it took off and it's the thing that's going to last, but the actual reality of it doesn't seem to be a huge story. Now, I understand a lot of people have issues, and rightly so, of him driving along the road in an incapacitated state. The only question is whether or not he knew getting into that car that he shouldn't be getting into it, or that he was just having, as he says, a reaction and it was involuntary. And really, are we ever going to know that?
Not unless he comes out and tells us. Because, like, so say, there's a lot of stuff which struck me about all of this. He releases his statement after the back injury and says he's pain-free for the first time in a long time. Pain-free, the nerves which were exposed are no longer exposed. So I was quite surprised that well over a week to 2 weeks after surgery, he needs prescription medication for his surgery. So either...
major back surgery.
Sure, but he was saying, I've been pain-free. What are the prescription painkillers for a week, 2 weeks later, if he's able to drive and move around? So that made me think, well, one, is he exaggerating the extent to how pain-free he is? I mean, maybe there have been complications. Well, yeah, it's possible.
Maybe he's just on, the reason he's pain-free is he's on better drugs than he was after the previous ones.
But it's entirely possible, he woke up feeling great and then a week or two on, actually the surgery didn't go as well. That thought struck me. But then I also noticed Noda Begay said that Tiger needs to make some changes in his life. He just used that word, changes. So is Tiger addicted to prescription drugs? Is what's crossed everybody's mind? I mean, if he's pain-free, why is he taking these prescription drugs? He's kind of, there's something amiss there. He needs to clear up the situation. Maybe you're right. Maybe you just take prescription drugs, even if the surgery has gone very well. but I don't know. But then the other curious thing is, it can't have been the first time, presumably, he was taking the prescription drugs after the surgery, so he would know what effect they would have on him. It's almost like he's trying to say, I was completely caught unawares, the effect these would have on me. I took the prescription drugs and I got in the car not knowing that I was going to end up the way I did. But how would that be? How could that happen? I mean, maybe he drank something which combined it, but he didn't have alcohol in his system.
Well, he was taking four or five different medications, it seems. So unless it was the first time he had taken that cocktail of drugs.
Yeah, that's possible for sure. But there's just a lot of information which doesn't kind of stack up for me. Now, maybe he simply says, well, my back started getting sore a week on. Maybe he lied about the condition of his back in the first place. Maybe he has a problem with prescription drugs unrelated to his back and he's not in a good place in his life. And I've no insider info there. That's just me logically speculating. Or, as you said, it's major surgery. This is standard. And maybe just for the first time, there was a certain combination which led to him being the way he is. But I don't know. I saw the Nota Begay use of the word. He needs to make some changes in his life. I just frankly don't think Tiger Woods is happy at all. The more I think about it, since 2009, he's putting a brave face on things. I think he's just still completely humiliated by the whole thing. And he's lost his golf game. He's lost his marriage. The sex scandal is still the first thing you think of every time you see him, really, and his back. And I just don't know. I just think behind the scenes we're going to find out in 5, 6, 7 years that basically the last decade of his life has been very unenjoyable for him.
Yeah, and when you think it's, what, 20 years since the Masters, all this stuff is a lot more recent. All this stuff sticks in your head a lot longer. Yeah. And all right, you'll have your golf nuts who will remember the great moments and the tournaments that are won. Mm. If he doesn't come back, and I don't think anyone expects that he will now at this stage come back to be anywhere near what he ever was.
Yeah.
It's incredible. We're coming up in 9 years since he won his last major.
No.
His period of without winning majors is nearly now as long as his period of winning majors.
Yeah. He's the same as Harrington.
Yeah.
Last major.
So this is what people are going to think of. As you say, they're going to think of the picture. They're going to think of the sex scandal. Mm. And that's got to be playing in his head all the time. And it is pity that, like, we're talking about arguably the greatest sports person of the last 25 years.
Yeah.
And he's just gone 40 and everybody pities him.
Yeah. Because I was listening to Jaime Diaz, the golf writer, was doing an interview about all this. And, you know, he quite rightly made the point. Woods has never actually addressed what the hell he was doing in the build-up to the fire hydrant. Really. He did the apology and he hugged his mother. But he just never spoke about it then. I mean, it was almost like, Diaz was making the point in press conferences, there was almost an element of, well, I've apologized and it's personal. I'm not talking about it in press conferences. So, like, I dare you to ask about it. And nobody really did. And the players never really kind of talked about it too much afterwards. And I don't know. It's this weird thing that he's done interviews. He did that one. We talked to the author in, was it Time Magazine last year? And it was heralded as always really open from Tiger. But it wasn't really, because it never actually dealt with the one thing everybody wants him to talk about. Like, what the hell were you thinking? Like, what was going on that you were doing some of the stuff you were doing? Like, some of the details when you look back at them again.
What was missing in your life that you had to go this way?
Totally. And I don't know. Now, look, you see, the danger with something like this could be total speculation. He could be in an okay place in his life and you're taking the mugshot and the fact that he was asleep at the wheel or whatever and making it representative of a life out of control. Like, maybe if he comes back and plays golf in 6, 7, 8 months and plays it well and has another 4, 5, 6 years, then actually the mugshot is just one bad night in his life. But I just look at it and I don't believe that he's in a good place. I think it is representative of a bigger issue.
But maybe being by himself is all he's ever known, though, because I think part of the sadness of Tiger is that there's this impression that he doesn't have a huge amount of friends, that when he was on the circuit, he never really kept in touch with anybody aside from Nota Begay. And maybe most of his friends are guys in suits that he met through sponsorship deals and that he sits around all day playing Call of Duty. Like, the successful part of his life was just spent on a golf course and on a driving range. It was a very solitary existence. Maybe he is more comfortable with that than we think.
Yeah. Yeah. The problem is there's an information vacuum here. We don't know how often he's taken prescription drugs.
Have we any right to know?
No. I mean, you could argue he's selling products to the public based on his talent and his image to a point, but he could argue it's just purely to do with his golf game. Certainly not. You can't say he's playing the family man card anymore, selling images. Do we have a right to know? I mean, if things are really bad, I don't think we do have a right to know. But if we're getting the wrong end of the stick here, maybe you should come out and clarify things a little bit. Then will anyone believe him? If he comes out and says, oh, look, it's one off, everything's fine, then you and I will sit here and Fionn will be here, or Dave will be here, and we'll just say, yeah.
He had to say that.
Not buying that. Of course he's going to say that. So, I mean, he absolutely has his right to his privacy. Like, it's a right he has taken advantage of throughout his whole career, you know?
It's just also hard for us to relate with the possible mental state he could be in.
Yeah.
Again, the success that he's had, to have to come to terms, and he's, whatever about the scandal in 09 and the injuries in between, right now, like that last statement of, I just want to make it clear, I hope to get back and play professional golf again,
yeah,
was very different to, I will be back.
Yeah.
That with everything he's achieved, with all the ambitions he still had, that suddenly he's having to get his head around the fact that he's 41 and he now has nothing.
Yeah.
He has nothing left to play for.
Yeah.
He may not play again.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what to think about it. I think you can't make a judgment until we know how this ends. This could be the mugshot that in 5 years you look back on, and it's similar to the hydrant. It was the moment where it sounded an alarm bell that he was in a really bad place, and my God, look how things unfolded so badly for him across 2018, 2019, 2020. Or again, like I said, equally, maybe as Davis Love III gave the impression, Tiger's in a great place. He's back playing golf in 6 months. He's back competing next year. He has a 2013-esque season where he wins 4 or 5 times, maybe sneaks another major, and the mugshot just is reduced to one bad, slightly embarrassing night. And there's not the same stigma, clearly, with taking your prescription medication for your back as there is with getting in a car drunk and driving. It's a more forgived offence.
Yeah. And rightly so.
Yeah.
But strangely, in America, I always got the sense that even driving under the influence of alcohol isn't taken as seriously as it is this part of the world.
No, for sure. It seems to be kind of okay. But there we are. I've no more other thoughts on it, really. If you want to move on, I mean, you can sum up
again,
the whole thing.
Like, you're never keen to speculate on anything. And like, this is all speculation almost, because we just don't know. And I think you're dead right that even Tiger coming out and trying to clarify things, we're so cynical now of everything he's ever said, because what we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years is everything's fine, I'm back.
Yeah.
And then he's struggling to bend down and pick up a ball.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think he's got some court appearance now on July 5th, which will be a bit of a
I'll
search.
Definitely tune in.
And I don't know, we'll see what he has to say about the whole thing. So that's Tiger Woods anyway in his DUI. I mean, the coverage was terribly unfair. It's just so embarrassing. That was just the main feeling last week, or was it last week, the week before when it all broke? Was just like, ugh. Is that like the self-inflicted, I know, but the man's been embarrassed enough. There's been some horrible details surrounding his exploits, and that mugshot now is just the creme de la creme.
I did think straight away when I woke up that morning and saw the picture and was reading about it, it didn't stack up right that Tiger would have been out drinking and would be behind the wheel drunk. He just, and maybe I'm again totally speculating and obviously don't know his personality at all, but he just never struck me as someone who'd be out drinking at 4 a.m. and then hopping in a car.
Yeah. Here's a question for you, right? And it was a point Diaz made as well, I think. But you know, and it's in Hank Haney's book, where there was a story where Woods got chatting to some other athlete at the range. It was like another Nike athlete, and the meeting had been arranged, and Woods kind of was asking him about his nutrition or whatever, and the guy's answer wasn't very impressive. He didn't eat overly carefully, and in Haney's words, like, Woods just said, right, basically, we're done, and kind of just took no interest in him after that turnaround, started hitting balls, basically just like, I don't respect you. You know, he was that cutthroat in his standards. Man, you just wonder what a 25-year-old Woods would make of this old man stumbling around on a police video. I'd say he'd have a pretty ruthless view of how life unfolded for that guy. But then again, hey, maybe our younger selves would all be cruel judges.
Yeah. But it's just, if you were to say it to Tiger when he was that age, so 02, 03, and he's at the peak of his powers, you know, when you're just turned 40, you're going to be a national embarrassment.
Yeah, and that's why, and I think that's why, you know, we've all kind of moved on from the scandal thing, and it's a weird thing to bring up now because it's unconnected ultimately to DUI and the back surgery. But when you think about actually living through that, from the highs he was on,
like this, yeah,
to the lows, I just can't think he has processed it or dealt with it yet. I don't think he's the type who would open up. Even I listened to a Sean Foley interview elsewhere this week, and Foley was saying, like, with all his players, he would try and talk to them on a level, a deeper level, about life, Justin Rose, about his father, about, you know, what it's all about on a deeper level, philosophical kind of conversations. Felt it was important to have that relationship. He was like, Tiger just could not get through to him, ever. Never wanted to talk about any of that stuff. There was small talk about the kids. There was some talk, you know, the usual gossip about other players. But he was not someone to talk about anything at any kind of depth. And I just think Woods, I suspect, has not really talked about what went on in his life with anyone. And I don't know how you process that. I don't know. Like, it's not like you could have talked to it to, what was the skier, his girlfriend for a long time?
Lindsay Vonn.
I don't think you can go into it with Lindsay.
Well, I'll tell you what, Lindsay.
You know?
Things got rough there for a while.
Yeah.
You should have seen the things I was doing.
Exactly. And I don't think he's talked to it about, you know, his mother.
Yeah.
And, you know.
That's the thing. So, unless he has gone and sought private help.
Yeah. And I dare say he's too proud to do that and too worried about that coming out.
Like, he literally could not go on television and talk about the things he has done.
Yeah. So I
go into further detail there.
I just kind of wonder. I mean, we'll probably never know. But it was just a moment. The DUI prompted a moment where I suddenly looked at the bigger picture and said, oh, like, the scandal is kind of a running joke for us, and we're also over it in a sense. But actually, imagine you were him. I'd say 7, 8, 9 years, you're probably still reeling from the fact that everyone who looks at you, it's behind
their
eyes.
In the back of their mind.
It's behind their eyes. And that's, I still think he's struggling to live with that.
Is this the lowest point? I just think back to the start of the year when we were doing the podcast, and we know he's going to Dubai and he's playing in California. And you're a little bit excited and you're wondering, maybe by the end of the year he can get back and get a little bit competitive.
Yeah.
Even then, worst case scenario, wasn't where he is now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think this feels lowest of the low, really. Because at least when the scandal broke, he was a major winner just the year before and was destined to probably break Jack's record. He had that, even though you wonder how much he cared about that the more you hear, you know, you read the Wright Thompson pieces and various pieces. Anyway, that's Tiger Woods. We're moving on. So let's zip through some other stuff going on. Padraig Harrington feared for his career. Oh my God. So he's out of St. Jude's Classic in
Memphis.
We
shouldn't laugh. I mean, but it's Harrington. Could only happen to Harrington.
I think we can laugh now that it's actually relatively minor. It's just a few stitches. So whilst coaching an amateur golfer on how to cure his hook, it was a hook that the amateur had, I stepped in close to demonstrate the action for a fade. But as I was stepping away, he continued to swing. He caught me flush on the elbow.
Oh, God.
My initial thought was that the elbow was shattered and that it was the end of my competitive playing career. I nearly fainted with the pain and the shock. I applied ice straight away to the elbow, compressed it to minimize any inflammation, and x-rayed the hospital. I was delighted to learn that it wasn't broken. It required 6 deep stitches, and I've advised to be cautious. It will need 10 to 12 days for stitches to heal, so I've been forced to withdraw from this week's FedEx St. Jude Classic tournament in Memphis. So that was how serious it was for a few milliseconds in his life. He thought, this guy has shattered my elbow. I mean, I guess, like, you think of a practice swing, and people really go whoosh on a practice swing. Like, it must have been the follow through. Like, I don't think a backswing, I'd say he did the fade. I would picture it as he did the fade swing, and then Harrington said, right, so that's how you do it, and then started to walk to the right, and this guy took a practice swing and caught his elbow going through. I didn't get the impression of a backswing could hurt you that much that you would feel, oh my God, you've shattered my elbow.
Well,
now I haven't seen the pace of this man's backswing.
If he was using an iron, would it have just ripped straight through the skin? If it was even on the backswing?
He said it caught him flush. Oh, on the backswing, I don't know. I'm imagining front swing, flush on the elbow as he's moved off to the right.
Yeah, and Harrington hasn't fully stepped away.
And he's in total shock because he wouldn't have seen it coming at all. Just this ferocious pain in your unprepared elbow.
It is a terrible shame that no video has emerged of this.
I mean,
just so we can find out who the amateur golfer was.
Can you imagine your
life? Oh my God. This is all I was.
Awful.
When I heard about this, all I was thinking about was when we went to Baldur Carrington's house. Yeah. And like the worst thing that could have happened.
Yeah.
Can you? Oh. You're never getting over that. I'd never play golf again.
If you ended
I would never swing a golf club again.
No, you'd be banned deservedly from every club.
What about if it was Harrington's fault?
I don't think people care about the details.
No?
The fact is, you did this. You swung a club in the vicinity of this
Shouldn't
man.
Have been salmon there.
Well, I mean, it's a weird one, isn't it? Like, how did you do that? How did you not see he was still near you? Unless Harrington slightly turned back to say one more thing, which is possible.
Yeah, yeah. I presumed he was done. He had been talking to me for 25 minutes.
Oh, dear. So, look, thankfully, that's okay.
Yeah.
Rory McIlroy, I'm ready for Erin Hills, he says. Looking forward to playing there for the first time. Last few weeks, obviously, frustrating. Never like to miss events, blah, blah, blah. And he's been back practicing in Quinta do Lago in Portugal, which has excellent short game facility, apparently. And he's feeling in very good shape. And I heard him speaking recently about his new equipment, and he was going through the process of testing it all. A very, very exhaustive process. He certainly confirmed that the ball screwed him at Augusta.
Did he confirm that the ball was the reason he decided to go with TaylorMade?
No. I'm not sure. Is he playing a TaylorMade ball? He went to a Titleist ball for a while, he was saying. There's a type of TaylorMade ball he was trying. Either way, it was very rigorous, the testing process. Like, there's all sorts of club names I can't even fully remember, but you know, he has got to the point now where his spin rate on the ball, he's got a ball basically now which is very low spin rate, and he can launch it high and it's going to hold the greens for him. He was saying he can hit a 4-iron now easily, like he can clip it 250. 240, 250, and it'll come down soft. And he uses the M2 driver TaylorMade as opposed to the M1 because he finds the M2. He hits the M1 slightly better, but the M2 is easier to control for him. And he's much happier with his irons. He's launching them brilliantly. But basically, he was finding that what happened, the reason for the confusion as late as Augusta was he tried out a ton of equipment when he played in South Africa earlier this year. And you remember that was like miles above sea level and there was no wind. And so suddenly when he came back at Bay Hill and played in the wind, things were all over the place. And because the ball was spinning so much, and obviously the more the ball spins, the wind hits it and it changes the distances dramatically, as amateurs know only too well. And he didn't have enough time to sort it all out for Augusta. So made a mess of things for him at Augusta. But he's saying now he's got everything well tested. He's tested it in the wind and his numbers have never been as good. It seemed like he's been honest. I mean, I know everyone who signs a new club deal and ball deal is going to say, my numbers have never been as good. But
well, now he's got to go and do it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, but he was saying, I'm really excited because actually, honestly, it's never been this good. And TaylorMade have specially made him some irons, which are perfect for him. And he says he's in a good place. Now, the only worry for Erin Hills, obviously, is the guy's played so little golf.
Yeah, like he's entering a 10-week stretch where he'll have three majors. Yeah. You hope that at the end of those 10 weeks... And the Irish Open as well, that he's not going, just needed a little bit more time.
I know.
As he goes and wins the FedEx Cup.
There is that worry. And interestingly, he mentioned as well that, you know, Dustin Johnson was admiring his irons, which had been specially made, to the point where he got on the phone and said, hey, why I want them.
I thought Dustin had his own special TaylorMade guy.
He does, but I mean, that guy got a phone call because Rory had some irons that Dustin liked the look of. Interestingly, Rory said him and Dustin are talking and hanging out almost every day, because they live in the same area and they're practicing in the same location. Now, either that, or you're saying to yourself, God, he became friendly with Tiger around the time he joined Nike, and now he's hanging out with Dustin? I think it's genuine, though. I don't think he was making it up.
But what is the conversation like with Dustin?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Maybe it's easier for a multi-millionaire to have a conversation with Dustin because you go to the same restaurants, you enjoy the nicer things in life.
Yeah. I'm thinking of buying a boat. What's your favourite boat? That kind of stuff. Yeah.
A speedboat.
He said Sergio gave him good advice about TaylorMade at the wedding as well. And he sent it out John Rahm about the ball. The ball apparently has made a big difference in John Rahm's life. It's got a quite longish, complicated name with numbers in it as well. It's not even a word. TaylorMade ball. Anyway, it's all about spin rates and this kind of thing. He was asked, what did you learn?
Rory talked a lot of business at Sergio's wedding.
Yeah.
It was like, Sergio's just got married.
Yeah.
Give the guy a break.
Yeah.
just his ex.
Yeah, no, he sort of did some business. He was asked what he learned from the Nike experience. And I mean, he said he didn't like their ball for a long time. It was too clippy around the greens. He didn't really like it. And he said that this time around, what I've done is I have ruthlessly said I'm not changing my swing an iota to suit the clubs. If the clubs don't suit me, they're gone.
But did he not say when he was leaving Nike that he was going to buy about 3,000 Nike balls because he loved them?
Yeah. He did say he had a supply. I don't think he was going to buy them.
Well, sorry, not buy them. Sorry, guys. Can I just buy a few balls before I leave?
They're $20 for 12. Yeah. No. Yeah, he did. But then he said he went pretty quickly to the Pro VX1 because he was used to that ball and then started messing around with the TaylorMade ball and really liked that one. So, yeah, he did say that about the Nike ball, but that's been dropped fairly quickly. So he's just into the gear. So that's Rory anyway. And we'll see him in Port Stewart pretty soon.
Yeah. Hopefully he's back fully fit for the US Open.
That's the thing, yeah. He said he's feeling good, he's got the all clear. US Open's next week, right?
Correct.
Okay, we'll do a pretty in-depth...
we might try and record on Wednesday.
Yeah, I think we should. For one of the majors, we have to record on a Wednesday. Amanda Nicholson and her pesky graduation.
Ugh!
18-year-old Amanda Nicholson. Amanda is speaking at her high school graduation, which is set for June 15th at Pacific Ridge School in Carlsbad, California, which I dare say is nice school. And Phil is going to miss the US Open to go to her graduation. As you get older and you share these moments, you realize the greatest moments in your life are those spontaneous moments with your family, said Mickelson. Although it did strike me there's nothing spontaneous about high school graduation.
No, what would be spontaneous would be holding a putt on 18 at Erin Hills to win the US Open and complete the career Grand Slam.
As I look back on my life, this is a moment I'll always cherish and be glad I was present. There's no greater joy as a parent. Some people started petitioning the school to move the graduation by a day.
Why can't they move it by a day?
I don't know. Jack Nicklaus was talking about this at his tournament last week and said that he said, well, they would always move the high school graduations of my kids to suit my schedule. But I was a generous contributor to those schools, he said.
Here, there's no way Phil Mickelson isn't the most generous contributor to that school.
I know. I don't see why they couldn't move it a day. But Amanda Nicholson has said, Dad, go play. Like, it's really not a big deal. I mean, I don't even know if my parents... Oh, I did have a secondary school graduation. Funny enough, I was student of the year. I made a speech.
Oh, my God.
At that as well. I had a valedictorian kind of thing going on. As voted for by classmates, not teachers. I want that on the record.
Ugh.
I was.
What an asshole.
Why?
I got an award for never missing a day of school.
Well, that's pathetic. You're a tryhard. I was voted as a king from my fellow students.
And your parents didn't even bother turning up.
No, they were there.
They knew the real you.
But like, fair point. But
it doesn't make any sense. I'm sorry.
Well,
make any sense.
The inside scoop is my phone beeped and the Golf Weekly WhatsApp group came alive and Nathan said, what's the story with Mickelson? And I thought, oh, maybe you just had seen a weird headline. And I said, his daughter's graduation. And then you said, but really? So, like, obviously, you're implying, like, failed drugs test or something like that.
Well, I mean, listen, the PGA Tour have only themselves to blame for any questions that anyone can
ask.
Well,
that's true. But, I mean, he's playing in Memphis this week, so it seems legit. And I doubt him and the PGA Tour and Pacific Ridge School have organised Amanda's graduation to hide a drugs test.
You need to open your eyes, Joe. You need to open your eyes to the world around you.
Yeah. So I think it's a pity.
It is a pity.
Huge pity. He's 47, turns 47 in the next couple of weeks. I mean, look, he's into his last couple of chances. He's really into his last couple of chances.
Particularly, I still think he'll have chances to win the Masters because he can play the course so well.
Yeah.
But a US Open, you think, is probably going to be a young man's game.
Yeah.
Move it by a day. Or just don't go. Just don't go.
Get the family to fly in to Erin Hills on the night of the graduation or the next day and have your own proper celebration, which can be spontaneous.
Like Phil has enough stories where Phil is the hero.
Yeah.
He doesn't need any more.
I mean,
he's going to be dining out in this for quite a while.
He does have a track record of this stuff, obviously.
He's shaming everyone else as well. Can you imagine all the other players on tour?
Yeah, you think we don't have kids graduating around this week too? God damn it, Phil. Because obviously, very famously against Payne Stewart at the 99 US Open, Bones was carrying the beeper. And if Amy Mickelson went into labour, Phil said, regardless of the leaderboard, I'm gone. And luckily for everyone, Amanda, 18 years earlier, was born on the Monday. So, but he would have said to Payne Stewart, you know, walking up the 18th on the fairway, he would have said, I got to go. Like, he was serious about it. And didn't he famously go to another graduation and, you know, flew overnight into another major and got no sleep and played on the Thursday? He talked on that Faraday podcast a lot about his family in a very genuine way. I think, we've talked about Tiger for 20 minutes. Ultimately, this is to be applauded. It's a phenomenal, it's not just saying my priorities, family. It's actually living it. I think, God, it makes me love me even more. But I just feel like, God, is the graduation that big a deal?
But it's on net. It's, yes, I fully respect the fact that he wants to be there for his daughter's graduation.
Yeah.
But surely it's avoidable.
Yeah.
Like, there has to be a way around this.
Surely she's known and the school have known. Yeah, we're thinking...
The US Open is fixed about 5 years in advance.
We're thinking around June 15th. Surely the school could have just checked the US Open.
June 15th, no. he'd be fine. Yeah, he'd be fine. He'll be 47 by then. He'll have retired, surely.
Yeah. I really want Phil to get the Grand Slam.
Well, so do I.
This was a chance. So,
have you seen the pictures of Erin Hills? I am wary of looking at photos of US Open venues a month out because invariably the rough is about 6 foot long and everyone's predicting 10 over par is going to win, and then you get there and it's not quite that bad.
Yeah.
But again, it's fairway, about a foot of rough, and then 10 foot of grass and weeds.
It's akin,
and crap.
I think there's basically no water and no out of bounds, but much of the rough is akin to out of bounds.
Mm.
Now, I saw those same photos, and we'll definitely get stuck into this next week. I am curious to know where exactly the crowds will be allowed to stand, because they could make an impact on that rough. You know, I mean, some of it can be fairly trotted down, but I would presume, as always, there'll be 10, 20 feet of rough before the crowd. So
that rough was so long as well, you'd wonder if it was trotted down.
Yeah.
Is it of a huge benefit? Because if your ball gets stuck underneath it, even slightly.
Yeah. It's an amazing story, Erin Hills. It's only open about a decade less. And there was a tragic story where the guy who built it was desperate always to have a US Open, and the course was built with USGA advice. And it went into receivership or bankruptcy or some trouble, and he had to sell it the day before they got the US Open. Yeah, there's a story there. We'll touch on it next week.
Sounds like right down Fionn's alley.
Something like that. Memphis this week, then Charles Schwartzel must have had a good start because he's the favourite at the moment on the latest odds I have. Brooks Koepka's there. Mickelson is there. I mean, imagine Mickelson does really well this week. I mean, then you got to look at really good
form.
Then
it's too late.
I'm in a top five finish. Francesco Molinari, who's playing really well lately. Molinari.
He just can't seal the deal.
No. Grayson Murray's there, Adam Scott's there, Russell Henley. Obviously some guys don't really like to play before a major. Peter Uihlein is there, and on we go. So that's Memphis, St. Jude's this week. In terms of recent golf, there was obviously Wentworth, where Shane Lowry kind of had a brain fart, as he said, hooked it on 13 when he was in the mix on the Sunday. And Alex Noren, who's now 8th in the world.
Oh, he's just been sensational over the last 18 months.
Yeah, he shot a 62, 10 under in the final round. Peter Uihlein, who's his playing partner, said it was the best round of golf he'd ever seen. It was that good. So Alex Noren's kind of just become a top 10 world player.
He sort of had that in him about 5 years ago, and he picked up an injury and it really set him back. Like, he had got himself to the upper echelons of the European Tour and looked as though he was going to make some sort of a breakthrough. Now, what he's done over the last 18 months to get himself that high is pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
Lowry was, oh God, it was frustrating that day. I watched back the last 7 or 8 holes that night, and I still wonder, was it the 12th that was almost his unravelling?
Par 5,
that should have been a par 4, that everybody, very least birdie, lots and lots of eagles, and he came away with a par that maybe at that moment it just got into his head that he'd missed an opportunity there. Did you say, was it 13 and 15, the double bogeys?
Yeah.
And then Neagle on 18.
An amazing Neagle, yeah. But I mean, that was kind of important because that meant he would have finished outside the top 10 and suddenly jumped to tied for 6th. So at least that was something, and he needs those Race to Dubai points. He's kind of kept up the form. He was decent last week as well at Bay Hill, Jack's tournament. And you kind of just hope he gets a bit of momentum there. Tends to play better this time of year.
Yeah, well, it's coming up now, the anniversary of the US Open.
Yeah. In other recent golf, so Kevin Kistner won the Dean and DeLuca comp. It was reasonable. It was okay.
Oh, that was great. Yeah. Except I was now, and Kevin Kistner has had so many runners-up finishes. Over the last year or so,
he's gone grey overnight. Did you notice that? He took off his hat. Suddenly, Kevin Kistner was grey.
Was he not always grey?
He wasn't grey last year.
Yeah. Well, the stress of all those runners-up finishes has obviously got to him.
Yeah.
But coming down 18, I was saying, please, just bogey this hole. You can go on and win the tournament in the playoff. But I think Spieth and Dustin Johnson were going to be in the playoff.
Yeah.
And Spieth played the most Spieth-esque final round I've ever seen, in that I watched him going, this guy is all over the place.
Yeah.
I think it was a 67, bogey-free.
Yeah.
Only player not to drop a shot all day. It's like, how did this happen? Every time I looked at him, his driving was all over the place.
Yeah.
But his short game again was right there.
Right. And then just last week, Jason Duffner wins at Bay Hill. Jason Duffner's 40. Really come on the scene late, like 40 years old. You know, he's a year or two, he's Tiger Woods' age, basically. What was he doing when Tiger was doing all that stuff?
Well, Tiger was doing all that stuff, so nobody else could do anything.
I know, but he wasn't even there.
Yeah.
He's just like burst on the scene in the last 5-6 years.
He's got himself a major.
No, for sure. And I mean, his problem, greens and regulation stats have been really good for a fair chunk of time recently. It's just his podium was bad. His podium was still iffy.
Well, his third round, what was it, 77 in the third round?
Yeah, went to pieces. He's had a few good US Opens. He's had a few top 10 US Opens. So, I don't know, maybe he's in...
He seems to have the right temperament.
He has no temperament.
Yeah, which is the right temperament.
Yeah.
Imagine him and Dustin Johnson in a pairing and you're stuck in the middle.
Yeah. Final point just to mention is Roberto DiVincenzo passed away, 94 years old. And there were a few good pieces about him. I knew he'd won the Open pretty famously.
Still the oldest.
1968.
In modern times.
Since old Tom Morris, clearly. Yeah, it was at 1967, Hoylake. And he had a load of top 10 finishes in the build-up to it. And then in Hoylake in 67, he holds off Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player. And the interesting thing is that DiVincenzo, aged 44 at this stage, was not expected to win the title, though he was feeling good about things. So he put a bet on himself at excellent odds, and he won £7,000 in 1967, which was more than double his prize money.
Nice.
That's a hell of a bet.
Probably illegal now, is it?
Oh, I would think so. Returned to Argentina, a national hero, was named in Argentina's top 5 sports people of the 20th century.
All right. Number 1, Diego Maradona.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think who else might be.
I'm not sure who else on the list.
I'm presuming a couple more footballers.
I'd say it's all footballers and DiVincenzo. So much loved. And then obviously, in some ways, he's maybe more famous for what happened at the Masters in 68, where he signed for his score and he was about to go into a playoff with the American Bob Golby. But it turned out that his playing partner on the day, whose name was Tommy Aaron, had mistakenly recorded a 4 at the 17th instead of a 3. DiVincenzo had managed a birdie there. And Tommy wasn't paying attention, and he put down a 4. And so DiVincenzo was walking off to celebrations, you know, because he's birdied the 17th and he's going to make a playoff and rah, rah, rah. Everyone's excited for him. There's a hullabaloo. So he doesn't really look at the card too closely. He presumes Tommy has marked the card properly. Mm. And so he signed the score after only a cursory glance. And obviously the rule in golf is if you sign for a higher score, that is your score. DiVincenzo therefore finished one shot behind Golby, blowing his chance of a playoff and handing the American the title. And when he was told of the mistake, he very famously said in his bad English, "What a stupid I am." And that was as close as he ever came to winning the Masters in 1968.
I'd say you'd struggle to forgive Tommy Aaron.
No. And what was terrible was in later life, other players felt very sorry for him and they commissioned a special green jacket made of the same fabric and the crest and all that and presented it to him. He's like, "I'm not wearing that." You know? I mean, I appreciate it and all, but I'm not wearing that. Right. I'd be embarrassed to do that.
Do you know where he's from in Argentina?
Ranelagh Golf Club.
Ranelagh, yeah.
What was that about?
It was named in honour of Viscount Ranelagh, who was some sort of an Irish landlord.
Yeah, I did see that. So he's been living there, hanging out there since he gave up golf. And now, age 94, gone. Described as a long hitter with fine control, DiVincenzo had what Golf Digest described as a drowsy swing that was at once rhythmic and powerful. DiVincenzo himself said, "If you hurry, then nothing seems to go right." That was his golfing logic. So, DiVincenzo's passed away. Worth a mention, I think, to say the least.
Yeah. Leona Maguire we probably should mention more often, considering she is the world number one amateur female golfer. She won the Annika Award this week for best collegiate golfer in America.
Wow.
Second time she's won it.
Wow.
First person ever to win it twice.
Wow. Because I saw Paul McGinley tweeting about this the other week. Mm. It probably should be a bigger story.
That was a different award she had won.
Oh, of course.
This was another one.
Right. Wow, fantastic.
Yeah.
And she wants to complete her education, presumably, then before she turns
pro. Yeah, she definitely had issues in terms of length that, compared to the professionals, she was struggling now. Maybe that's all changed over the last couple of years. She got a little bit older, and when she turns pro, she'll be fully ready. Certainly, I think even more so than men's golf, females golf, there's a very good line of from the collegiate system onto the professional circuit.
Right. Wow, fantastic. I didn't realise she'd won it for the second time. It's a huge achievement. Okay, very good. We should get her on the pod and talk to her about what it's been like to make her way in collegiate golf over there. Be worth doing, wouldn't it? Anyway.
Anyone knows her, just send her a mail there and tell her any Thursday. Most Thursdays.
Yeah, once it suits us, we'll do it. Yeah.
Some Thursday.
We're back next week. So we'll do the pod next Wednesday. Fiona or Dave will be around and we'll hopefully get a good guest on. Someone who's on the ground in Erin Hills to give us a sense of the course over there. And second major of the year. It will be good. Thanks for downloading as ever and we'll talk to you next week. Good luck.
Go and tell all my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket town. Little JD starter kid right here.